Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabigabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas and beans. It's the Four Bean Mix. I know we've been away for a while, but it's good to be back. We came back because it's November, which in Australia, as you all know, is called Movember, the month when it's okay to talk about men's mental health. So we thought we would come together just for this one special episode and talk about mental health, talk about our mental health, and talk about some of the things that you've asked us in your questions. Thanks again, by the way, for your questions and for your interest and your feedback. We really appreciate it. So you're hearing, if you're not seeing the video, you're hearing from me, Gary, you're hearing from Daniel, you're hearing from Dino, and you're hearing from Kirk, and we're spread around the world at the moment. So we'll see how the internet copes for us. Thanks, guys, for joining us. I think maybe why don't we just launch straight in and go in the deep end right at the start, and I'm going to ask you a question that all four of us can have a go at answering to start off with. How's your mental health at the moment? How would you describe where you're up to at the moment with your mental health?
I don't mind starting on this one.
Thanks, Dino. Thanks,
yeah, mate. So, well, first of all, hello, everyone. Nice to chat with all of you gents again. It's nice to see the guys and it's really good to reconnect again. I suppose the other question I wanted to ask is, I suppose I go ups and downs, and if I consider a month as a good, if I'm in a good space for over a month, I'm curious to know, is that a good length of time considered to other people, or do people consider their space in like over weeks or days? And for me, I reckon I think my blocks are in kind of like weeks. I have a good couple of weeks, and right now I'm probably been in a really good space for the last few weeks. We've had a few really good things have happened. We've been away on holidays. Lexi went on a school camp, so it's the first time she's actually been away from us for two nights, and that was a huge success. And there's so much things that came out of it with, just from volunteers that were there. And just I think people just got to spend a couple of days in my shoes for a little bit and just sort of see, I suppose, a lot of the challenges we go through and things and how hard it is and how difficult it can really be. And so it was really rewarding for us, I suppose, just for other people to kind of get that experience and the joy they got out of the experiences that they managed to do at the camp with Lexi and, you know, like they got it through abseiling and things like that and, you know, just some really amazing sort of things that they were able to achieve. So it was great and, you know, just sort of put us in, while it was interesting on the other foot, being at home without Lexi and actually spending a couple of days without her and just going, oh my, you know, like having a different world of, you know, of not so much carefree, but just, you know, not having to have 24-hour-a-day sort of responsibilities and, you know, sort of demands, you know, was also another, you know, it was also the other side of the coin, you know, was also quite interesting. But so I think the last couple of weeks or last probably few weeks, it's actually, you know, I felt like I've been in a really good space. And the other thing as well is I've actually started seeing a psychologist as well. So I went and had my first session a couple of weeks ago as well, which, you know, I think came from, I know from chats that we've all had, and Kirk, I know you've mentioned about seeing psychologists. I think probably we all have over some sort of time. So I hadn't seen one for a long time again. So it was good to start that process again. So it's nice that I'm back in fortnightly sessions again to just sort of talk and try to, you know, deal with what's coming up and try to be in a really good headspace, you know, because things are looking, while work's positive, you know, there's work's come back, you know, tenfold and it's really busy, you know, I want to be in the right frame of mind to tackle a lot of those things and still live and still tackle my day-to-day, you know, journeys that we all go through. So, I'm just sort of curious as well to know what other people's length of time of what they consider to be a good space, if it's days or if it's weeks or if it's months as well.
Yeah, good question.
I think for me, it's. I think I'm with you, like it's a weekly thing probably. But also, you know, I can know that, I've had a good run if I can't remember like the last, like what, like the weeks blend into each other, you know? Like I get to a week and I look back and I think, well, it actually feels like it's been longer than a week. So, you know, that must be a good thing, which I think is kind of what the last, at least like what October has been like, yeah, for me as well. I do have the kind of foreboding, like the kind of dread of what comes up at the end of the year. I mean, it's, you know, it's always tough for just a whole host of reasons. For us at the moment, it's like really basic stuff, like not being able, like we can't find a Santa. There's just, you know, because Ivy, you know, she needs to lip read, a beard obstructs that. She needs an interpreter. There's not many that provide that. So we're just kind of like cutting simple Christmas things like that, which is like probably fine in the end, but doesn't exactly give you a hopeful way of getting off to that whole season, you know, that's coming up. Yeah. So there's that slight like, oh yeah, it's back to that time of year, and you know, it's really beautiful, but there's also this other level of stuff that you're gonna encounter every time you try to do something, which I think probably all have in our own ways. Yeah. So I guess I would say it's been a good few weeks, but also a little bit on edge at the moment because I can see that's the next thing, right?
Yeah, I think I'm in a pretty good space at the moment. I have been for quite a while. You know, I think I'm in a fortunate space at the moment where I don't feel like I'm having sort of monthly lulls or anything like that. Although, interestingly enough, I was working in the yard on Saturday just trying to get the yard done, and I had this little wave of anxiety that came over me and just second-guessed myself and just thought, am I all right at the moment? Am I in control of everything? And, yeah, it passed pretty quick, but it's the first time I think it's happened since I was really struggling with everything. But then I knew I was going through something and I needed help. But, you know, I've been in a really good space, so it sort of just hit me like a wave that just came and went, which was very, very strange. But, all good since then. But, no, I'm in a really good space. I've been for a while and, it's very positive about everything at the moment.
So to answer Dino's question, do you normally measure time in, you know, weeks or days or months or hours, or what about that for you?
Not really. I mean, I think the like Daniel sort of touched on, things are so busy that weeks are flowing into each other, especially at the moment, and coming into, you know, the silly season. But no, I don't really measure them. I haven't had to find myself measuring them for a long time. I've been, I think, really lucky with some of the hard choices I made have actually had long-term benefits, probably the main one, quitting alcohol. So I think that played a huge role in the weekly cycle of getting through the stressful week and then hitting the alcohol on the weekend to cope with the stress of the home life when I was struggling. And then you'd have your come down when you go back to work after a weekend of drinking. So you'd have that sort of anxiety, feeling sluggish. So I think once I eliminated that, it got rid of that week-to-week process or cycle that sort of you were stuck in, or I was stuck in. And I think it just showed how much of an issue drinking was for me in terms of what effect it was having on my mental health, as opposed to not being an alcoholic as such, but just it was having such a negative impact on what I was dealing with at the time that cutting that out just was probably 50% of the problem right there, because it allowed me to focus and get that mind, you know, straight where I need to focus on the mental issues that were going on with it. So,
Thanks, guys. I mean, for me, I'd have to say, to come to your question, Dino, I generally measure it probably in the hours rather than anything else. You know, I'll go through a day when it depends what hour I'm in as to how I am. Day and night, they're different. So, you know, and that's always been the case for me, and I can dip into a place for a while, maybe minutes, maybe hours, and then be fine a little while afterwards. So it's just an interesting question that you asked. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, it depends what hour you ask me as to how I answer. And, and the circadian rhythms are always a thing. I mean, I always find in the afternoons, four-ish, five-ish, I dip. I go right down, and everything that I can think of that's wrong tends to crowd out everything else, and that's been the way for me for a long time. A couple of you mentioned anxiety, Kirk, and you mentioned concern about the future, Daniel. You know, so I guess there's anxiety for me too. But for me, my main issue at the moment, and has been for a few years, is grief. Or a few griefs, which I really haven't dealt with. And I just thought, it just occurred to me today when I had a quiet day today, a people-free day today, and I really need those, but they're the times when I sort of do a stock take and I have a think and I have a look inside and I see how I'm doing, because I'm very distracted, I'm very busy, I'm very productive, and if I'm not, that's the times when I stop and just have a look under the bonnet and see what's going on. Yeah. And it's quite clear whenever I do that I'm not in good shape. So it's not a case – like the things that I do to distract myself are good things. They're all productive. They're all helpful. They're good, you know, healthy things. I could choose some unhealthy things, I suppose. But so there's that. But it does remind me, you know, that I could probably do really well with – confronting some things and working through some things and cleaning up some things. So, wow, that was a pretty good 10-minute start. We touched on so many things we could spend the next 6 hours talking about. You want to go back over any of that before we move on?
Because quite interesting what you mentioned there, though, Gary, because I'm quite similar, but I think for me, my demons seem to be when I go to bed, when it's quiet, and when I finally... You know, like when I've lost all of my distractions, all work and everything, where I'm just so distracted and so occupied and busy and things that, you know, I'm in a good space. And I think it's when I finally go to bed and actually, you know, it's dark and it's quiet and essentially saying goodnight. And that's when my mind starts ticking and I start thinking about things and what's coming up and everything. And I think that's when my anxiety kind of sort of tends to want to kick in, is that dark space at nighttime, which seems to be my sort of demons for that sort of time when you don't have all of those kind of things to stop you from going there.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you guys find that you have a bit of a crutch too that you rely on to push those demons aside or sort of get you glossing over them just to keep moving on. And I use an example of mine. Like it was drinking every weekend because I used to have to come home and know that I couldn't sort of escape what I was dealing with work for that 10 hours. So I used to sort of drink, work around the yard and drink and numb it that way. And lately, probably for the last year, although not as much of a problem in terms of the negative outcomes, but I've just found that I've started vaping and it's like I know I shouldn't do it because it's bad for me. I'd be like smoking, really, but I really enjoy the fact that it's like I've got something that I can fall back on. Yeah. You know, and I'm trying to think, oh, I want to get rid of it. And I've thrown them out a few times and then a few days later I'll be off it and then I'll think, oh, I'm going to go buy one. But, yeah, and it just made me look into it more to think, why do I always feel like I need to have something there as a crutch or there as to take my mind off it? I think there's something more to that attachment. But, yeah, just wondering whether you guys have thought about that or have something similar.
Yeah.
Probably
not so much.
I reckon probably yes, although I'm probably just not as conscious of it as you are, or maybe it's not just like one thing that's like ready to hand, like, you know, if you're vaping, like you can pick it up, right? It's right there. I think it's more like a I don't know. If it's a crutch, it's probably like just needing to blow off like literally like just going, just get out and just go somewhere, you know, take a long walk kind of thing, which I do quite regularly. And don't really put it in the category of blowing off steam, although it probably is from like an objective perspective. Like that would be like a crutch probably for me. It's just, I guess you could say exercise, like not in a planned way, not at a specific time, just you know, when the body is craving it. Because I guess it does come from like a craving kind of play.
So it's just like a vice, really, isn't it? Some sort of vice that you. But did you find that you know, from giving up alcohol, you need? I suppose it comes from just needing something else, from losing that one thing. Did you find, like, did you start with the vaping? Sort of comes after the alcohol had finished, or was that? Smoking back then as well, like
it wasn't like
with mates.
Yeah, so I've always been a casual smoker, and I was doing that ever since I was, you know, 16, 17, and it never picked up to be a full-time thing. But it wasn't until sort of I quit drinking and got things, I guess, on the straight and narrow and fixed up under management with the mental health side of things that I started to pick that up. And it's funny because I've always thought, yeah, I don't have a addictive personality. You know, I don't like things. And I said to my wife, Tara, one time, because she's like, oh, you're vaping a lot. And I'm like, oh, don't worry. You know me. I don't have an addictive personality. And she looked at me with a look on her face fuck off. Yes, you do. And then I thought, shit, maybe I do, because then it started playing my mind. Like, I cannot put this thing down. Like, and if I have it too late at night, then I can't sleep because the nicotine obviously makes you feel awake. Yeah, and,
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm like, there are negatives to this, you know, and I know, but I'm like, well, now I'm like under that nicotine hit. So anyways, and now I'm going to try and deal with that, which isn't, you know, as bad as anything else. But yeah, it's an interesting thing when I think about the fact that I'm somehow relying on it maybe as a way to cope with something else I gave up. But
yeah. I mean, I think the word crutch is a little bit loaded because it sounds as though it's kind of got a negative connotation, hasn't it? But let's face it, every one of us gets through the day by coping with things that are difficult and the challenges that are too much for us. Whether you call that a crutch or a way of coping, I guess, is debatable. But to me, every one of us is doing things, using things, relying on things, if we can, that get us through the day. And if we get a chance to make those positive things or healthy things, well, why not? That's good. Mm-hmm. If they become self-destructive, I guess that's a different matter.
Yeah,
but everyone, whether it's Daniel going for that exercise, getting your body moving, getting some of that energy out, thinking, you know, that's a healthy thing to do anyway. So, you know, it's got. But vaping, I don't know. I've never vaped. I can't help there. But no, I just think everyone should be aware that. Well, it's probably to our benefit to always be aware that there are things that help us get through the day, and that's fine. Because no, that's everyone, right? But are those things healthy and good things, or are they going to hurt us? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, let's pick up from there and keep going. Movember, right? So you grow a mow, you whatever, you know, it's very cute. The idea is for a month of the year, you make the point that it's okay to talk about men's mental health, which is lovely. That's terrific. So that's what we're doing. My question is, why do men need a special month? Why do we need a special month for men to talk about mental health? Why don't women have a mental health month? I mean, there is a mental health day that's for everyone, but there's a specific month. So is there something intrinsically about men that's going on here, do you reckon? What's going on here?
Well, is it the stigma that it's because we never speak up and we never discuss what our mental health is? And I think there was, you know, I think there's just this thing that, you know, they think that, I suppose people think, you know, we've never been open to talking about our mental health. And I think initially it was a great way to bring it out in the open and for men to start speaking up, and now it's okay to talk. And it's got nothing, you know, I think there was a lot of men afraid of their masculinity by talking about mental health and things. And it doesn't, we all know that doesn't need to be that way. And I think it's just a good way to open it up, that conversation, and get it all going, I suppose.
I think that's right. I think, like, there's kind of two sides to it. One is, like, the thing where, you know, it's Movember and, you know, people are thinking about themselves, or maybe you're thinking about, like, one particular person, should I check in with them, or, you know, on an individual level. But there's also this, like, cultural side to it, and you know, knowing that we were going to be kind of addressing this in the podcast, I guess, or thinking about Movember, I was on a bus yesterday and I was really struck because I saw a poster for a health service advertisement that literally said, are you a man who who has experienced trauma? Are you a man who suffers from PTSD? And it was a very kind of stripped down, like not a jokey kind of thing, like a sensible kind of, you know, but in an approachable way. Like, it was nicely designed and very upfront. And I looked at it and I just thought, if you didn't have something like Movember having kind of expanded over the last, whatever it is, 10, 15 years, I don't think you could get a poster like that just upfront in a kind of calm, everyday setting with that kind of language. So I think it's kind of like, as a culture, it's kind of like it's put a wedge into things and kind of cracked open this bigger sphere, this bigger realm of discussions that you can have now. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's like something. You almost need to have the jokey bit or the kind of, you know, the gimmicky thing as like a permission slip to get to the more, the bigger, more darker, maybe serious thing.
Yeah, permission slip. That's great.
Yeah, and I guess that's what the mo is. That's the permission slip. That's the joke around it. And maybe there's a metaphor in the mustache. You know, it's not, I wouldn't call it on trend anymore. Like, I think about back when early 90s and the 80s, and I see photos and videos of my dad and all the dads with big mustaches, and that was awkward. I mean, they looked like gooses back then, but it was on trend. So there's got to whoever made up, I guess, Movember must have thought, let's make these guys grow something that makes them look different, makes them feel awkward. Because that's good for getting a conversation started, right?
Hey, so, that's interesting.
And I think it's just got traction then. And, you know, it's funny, one of the juniors or assistants at my work, he actually said the other day, hey, do you want, and he has a mow. Like, he's 24, 25, and he just has a mow all the time. But he's like, hey, do you want to, like, trim your beard off and we'll do Movember together? And I thought initially no, but then I thought, yeah, that's, look, I'm going to look like a goose, but who cares? It's cool that this 25-year-old guy who, you know, I don't know everything about his life, but, you know, someone who's 25, no kids, no mortgage, like just a girlfriend, you know, you think you've got no stress as well, but you don't know the story. But when you compare him to someone who does have, you know, young family, mortgage and all that, they haven't got that additional stress. But the fact that he was like, hey, do you want, let's do this for November together, that to me shows that the initiative is getting traction when you've got the young guys on a construction site saying that. So
That's interesting.
So I'll probably do it wrong and cheat and shave off the beard tonight and rock into work with an established mow already. But for those of you who know my facial hair ability, you'll know this took about this takes about 6 months for me. So if I go bald November 1, I'm like 5 o'clock shadow by November 30. So I need a jump start.
That's a sacrifice, yeah. I mean, you think of the Mo, you think of the 70s porn star, don't you really? I mean, it was just a kind of a, or the 70s television star, they all had Mo's in those days. Yeah. They do, they look ridiculous. Sorry, gents, if you're wearing a Mo and you like it. But so I guess what I'm asking, though, is you're quite right, Dino, to say, I think, you know, well, all of you have said this, it's good to bring it out there, make it a bit of a gimmick, make sure that everybody knows, okay, well, we can talk about this. What's wrong with talking about this? That's great, because men perhaps have tended not to talk. So there's certainly that. So it's great. Let's have Movember. It's fantastic. Here we are talking about our mental health. We're going to talk about how we've dealt with it. We've already touched on it. I guess I occasionally get the sense from some of the mums that I've known over the years, I don't think they're saying this, but I'm wondering if they're thinking it. Are men somehow more fragile, more less capable with dealing with emotions, with facing difficult times? You know, are women inherently tougher or something? You know, do you ever get that sense? Do you ever get that feeling that, oh, right, oh, man, yeah, they need some extra help because they're not as strong as we are?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think it depends how you look at it. I mean, if you look at the original biology around it, the man and woman, and the man's a hunter gatherer and he's tough, and the woman is the nurturer. I think it's sort of it would show that the woman or women in general are better talking about their feelings, because for many of the years, or even still now, in a lot of cases, they're the primary caregiver, or they're the ones that raises the kids, and they probably traditionally taught the kids how to have feelings and emotions and things like that when the men were at work or they were off hunting and gathering and that sort of thing. You know, I think all those years of evolution will take a long time for it to spin around. But look, I would say after dealing with, you know, seeing how my wife is with the kids compared to me, and just seeing what women go through in terms of childbirth and the impact it has on their bodies forever and all that, and they build a resilience that men don't understand. And you can be a really empathetic and loving husband. You never carry the key. You don't get the stretch marks for life. You don't have the impact that I think that has, and I think women have that in common with each other, and they can speak about it, where, you know, men are guarded, and I think it's a shame. And, you know, it's surprising how much after I've had my mental health struggles and started talking about it, how many men that I will talk to about that, or say, you know, even people at work who, you know, if I start a new job and have a new team, and I will just sort of say it's important to talk about that. You know, if I start the conversation, guys that I don't know very well will even say, oh, you know, I've had this, or I've had this going on in my life before. But it just takes that one person to breach the subject. And then you'll find a lot of guys will open up, maybe not fully, which is fine. You don't, you know, someone you just meet, you don't open up fully to anyway. But for them to go, yeah, look, I've struggled with my fair share as well. Someone's got to rip that Band-Aid up and start the conversation. And then you'll find that a lot of guys, I think, are sitting there going, I wish I had someone to talk to, but I'm not going to raise it first and tell someone I'm struggling. I need someone to start that for me.
Yeah. What about you, Danny? Do you reckon men are inherently less equipped
for
life than women are?
Wow, what a loaded question. I don't know. I don't know if I'd say inherently, but I do think there's a way there's kind of a different way for men that men do tend to talk about stuff to the way women do. And I think women are kind of looking for like points, like in conversation with each other, are looking for like points where they overlap and things that they have in common, right? So if one said, you know, I've been struggling with this, then, you know, they're going to share stories, which is kind of there's a connection there. And I think for men, there's more of a tendency to sort of think to to think maybe, oh yeah, I like to hear it from someone else and then think to yourself, oh yeah, you know, I have that too, but what I've got, it doesn't really, you know, it's not the same thing. Like it's not, you know, I've been feeling down, but I'm not depressed. Like that, like depression is a real thing for other people. Like, you know, almost as like a kind of an excuse or like a defense mechanism or something. It's like, I, in order to be kind of strong and self-sufficient, I don't fall into that camp, though I sympathize with other people is kind of the thing that in my experience, like men will bring to a group or a conversation, like that's the starting point. And they're always kind of looking for a way to fall through a loophole that you aren't in that circle. And I think, I don't know, to me, like Movember, it has, like people I know, it has kind of helped them overcome that kind of barrier. Like I'm thinking of specific people who kind of like maybe the guy you were talking about, Kirk, had started off as like supporters in principle of Movember. Like, yeah, oh, you know, men's mental health is an important issue. I'd like to support that. Let's do it. Let's, you know, let's do the mustache thing. Not thinking of themselves as like one of the people who might benefit, but they're doing it for other guys. And then, you know, have gone on for a few years, participated every year, and then turned around and realized, oh, actually, I there is something with me. You know, I wasn't seeing it, or I wasn't kind of owning it before. I was just trying to help out, but actually, I do fall into this circle of people who might benefit from this. And it's like they needed that structure to kind of not go through the loophole, you know. Or to come back into it. And I think that's a really complex kind of setup to get men to kind of face up to these things that they have in common with others who are going through struggles that I think just, yeah, women touch on more naturally. They're more kind of the culture makes it easier for women, I guess, to bring others into the fold and less easy for men.
But I think it's harder to find someone who actually, you know, when you get deep into it, don't have a struggle. Like really, I think really now, everybody is struggling with one thing or another, and especially after what we've all gone through, you know, we can't, you know, call it post-COVID, if you will, you know, we're still in the midst of it somehow, but I think, you know, I think everybody has struggled in one way or another. So, you know, I think just, you know, this whole mental health, you know, I think we all have it in some sort of way. You know, it's just some people deal with it a lot worse than others, and some people can handle it better or just not to some extent as other people. So it's, I think if you pretty much ask anyone, I think everyone's got to have some sort of struggle at the moment too.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's valid. I think it's no different than anyone, you know, everyone, male or female, through their life, they'll roll their ankle, they'll hurt their hand, they'll break their bone, whatever. And it's a part of the body, a muscle or whatever that is physically hurt. And, you know, why should the mind and that be any different? Everyone's going to go through different things, perceive things differently. It's about your identity, whether they go, hey, shit, I think I need help here, or I can handle this on my own. I'm sure some do. I'm sure some don't, or some may let it go for 5 years like myself and then go, fuck, this has just overpowered me, I need help now. So, but it'd be good if more guys in particular would put their hand up when it doesn't feel like such a big issue and go, shit, I think I need help, I better talk to someone or, you know, find a mate and have a beer because, you know, that could really help it and stop it from festering to become the bigger problem that a lot of them turn into.
So. Yeah.
But do you mean, Gary, like, are you saying that maybe Movember kind of belittles the problem, or that it's not that it's not a problem that men feel they can address without kind of making like belittling it in a way or diminishing it first?
Well, it just seems like it's because it doesn't seem to come naturally to most of us men to have this conversation, and we're not given permission to, or we're not encouraged to, around the you know, at the canteen at work or out in the workplace or whatever. Generally speaking, you're not really likely to find the opportunity to talk about these things. So, whereas it may well be possible that for the mums out there, when they get together, it's the most natural thing in the world to do. And so I just it's a little bit artificial. Like, Are You Okay Day, for example. Is very controversial now, because is that helping or hindering? Is that making things better or worse? You ask someone if they're okay, what the hell does that mean? How are you supposed to, how the fuck are you supposed to answer whether you're okay or not? You know, so there's that side of it. On the other hand, you know, it's probably saved lives. It's probably given somebody a chance to say, no, I'm not. And so I'm not against the concept. I'm not suggesting that, and I'm not belittling it. I think here we are talking about it, but I think it just does raise a question for me personally. All right, why, as a man, what's going on with me as a man that would mean this might be necessary? And so I just thought I'd raise it with you. I mean, over the years, as we've talked about before, I and I know you, Daniel, have found this too, and probably Dino too, and well, all of us have. You know, we don't encounter very many other men who are dads of kids with disabilities, because for various reasons we're just not mixing or able to mix, and so we mix with the mums, you know, and we get, it becomes obvious on a regular basis how differently the conversations go when you're with mums than they do with dads. I was talking to a counselor friend of mine, and I really do encourage you guys, if you're listening to this, if you're a bean and you've heard us talk about counselors and psychologists, listen, mate, just give it a go, all right? I mean, it may not help you, but it probably will. If you're a bit embarrassed about it, don't tell anyone. Just go, because honestly, every one of us would say it's been really helpful to talk to somebody who's had a bit of background and training in this, as long as they're not a dickhead. And this counselor, well, because you've got to watch out for that too. And just because someone's got a counseling degree doesn't mean that they're not a dickhead. But if you find someone who isn't, then obviously it's worth it. But this counselor said to me, you know, most men have been wounded by other men. It's men that have done the wounding. And so if you're a man and you've been wounded, you're going to go through life, you know, holding in that wound, binding it up, not letting on because it hurts. And it's the men that you mix with who may well be the ones who've contributed to it or caused it to happen. So whereas more often than not, women are able to find their own tribe. So look, let's unless you wanted to continue with that, I think that was really valuable for me. So thank you for answering that. We had a really interesting question come in from a listener a while back who wanted to remain anonymous, and we did answer part of this question, but we didn't get to the end of it. And I thought it might be really another angle on this for now, especially for our boys, for our sons. You know, the question was, how do you make it so that your children, both daughters and sons, but how do you make it so that your children know that taking care of their mental health is important, so they will do so without shame as they get older? Which I thought was an excellent question. What do you reckon about that one?
It's a pretty hard question too, you know, because I know, I think I know from, you know, my little outbursts of when I was feeling a lot of pressure and going through some sort of rougher stages that, you know, my outbursts, you know, would trigger and I'd just be, you know, I just lose my shit really easily and I'd yell, and then, you know, and then it's when you realize that you're doing it in front of the kids and that you're showing these kind of glimpses of so much weakness, but you know that you are sort of struggling and it's sort of showing, and it's, you know, see, I know I'm trying my best now to you know, only enforce positive kind of reinforcements with my kids, and you know, and that starts from me. You know, it's the way that I now have to open up to them and, you know, explain to them that it can be tough, you know, sometimes, and there are tough situations that we all go through, and you know, I think communicating is definitely the the best way to be sort of dealing with, rather than sort of bottling it up inside me before it, and to the point where I just kind of break and crack and let it all out. And, you know, and that's usually the parts that I really want, you know, that I'm trying to avoid now in front of the kids mainly.
I think it's really tough because there are two parts to that question. One is a bit about shame, like how do you make kind of the issue not be a shaming issue?
Mm-hmm.
And the other part is like, I can't remember the wording, but it was something like how do you make sure that you're taking care of your own mental health? So there's like a self-awareness kind of thing there as well. And yeah. I honestly, personally, like I'm not sure I can answer to that bit. Like I feel very bad at being self-aware in this respect. And I actually think that that's certainly in my case, at least, like that's part of the mental illness, is that you're maybe aware, but you're not going to do anything about it, or you're not aware. You need another person there to...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Pointed out to you and to us, so I feel like I'm a very bad guide in that respect for Mike. But the shame, the issue of shame, just addressing that, I think we try to do all we can to kind of really be just matter of fact, upfront, explain simply and clearly, as in kind of as direct a way as possible. I mean, basically, I think it just comes down to that principle of, like, with a lot of things, kids will notice. They will notice and they will have questions. And our outlook here, at least, is if they are old enough to ask the question, they're old enough to deserve a simple and direct answer. Because if you're evasive about it, that's where the shame, that's where it comes from, this idea that you can't talk directly about something, you know, that there's something shameful or something to be hidden comes from that. So I think, you know, when it is one of us who needs to kind of address the subject with Ivy, it's, you know, I think we start from the physical, like here's how, like there's something in my body, I'm feeling very tired or I'm feeling whatever, like try to explain it in physical terms and so that she can understand, because she will have had those feelings at least, and then say, move from there to kind of be a bit more matter of fact about, you know, but it's not just, I'm not just tired because I've gone for a long run or whatever. It's there are these other things going on, and just being plain and simple about the things that are on my plate that she might not be aware of, which is good because then she has a better kind of understanding of, you know, adult life and what it's like. And after just describing that, then kind of giving a sense of like what I, or if we're talking about another person, because sometimes we are talking about other people's mental health, of like what they might need to make them feel better. And it's not, I don't think we talk about it in terms of recovery or improvement, just like what is the next small thing that will make this person feel a little bit better, right? Not on a huge trajectory, but like now, what can we do now? And kind of, in a way, kind of, I guess, connecting back to what Kirk was saying, like, you know, people will have rolled ankles, people will have all sorts of, like, minor bodily ailments. Like, what can we do practically to help this person feel better? Like, treating their body in this moment, like, to make them more comfortable. And I think when we talk about it that way, it's literally out in the open then. Like it's something that you're looking at with your eyes and you're thinking about what can I do? Like right now, physically, tangibly, even if it means stepping back. And it's not then this kind of abstract hush-hush thing that has like still question marks lingering over it. It's a different, it may still be complex, but it's not taboo. It's not shame. It's just a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Mm. I guess in our family, we were very mindful that we knew that Willow's diagnosis was going to have a lot more, well, her conditions and things were going to need a lot more time put into her. So we're very mindful that Ava, our eldest, knew early on that that we were going to check in on her to make sure if she was feeling, you know, sad, that she maybe doesn't seem like she was getting as much attention early on, and the reason why that it seemed like Willow was getting all the attention. So I think we started that early on for her to, you know, tell us how she was feeling rather than try and bottle anything up. I think then the whole mental health for her came around when I had my breakdown, and the way I handled that was so poorly that the kids couldn't not notice. You know, one day I was there, the next day I'd left, and they didn't know why. So I couldn't hide from that. Tara and I couldn't hide from what they saw. So I guess I had to be very upfront with them to say what had happened, why I left for a week, that they didn't do anything wrong, and, you know, why I was now taking a tablet a day. And, you know, I called them daddy's crazy pills, and I sort of made it, it's a bit of into a joke that I'm taking my crazy pills, and they thought it was funny. But I think now I look back on that when that question was asked, and I think I called it daddy's crazy pills because it made a bit of humor around what was serious, but something that, you know, I was ashamed of the way I acted in that moment and the way I handled it. So, you know, they became daddy's crazy pills, which you don't call them anymore. I take them now and no one even notices. But, you know, and I think that what I put them through only helped the situation in terms of awareness around mental health for the family unit. So from that moment, it's been very much spoken about, and we make sure we check in with Ava a lot because she's quite an emotional person anyway. She really cares about people's feelings and things, and you know, Willow, she's pretty brutal. Indy's only 5, so she'll get there. I'm sure she'll turn emotional, as girls do. But I think we have a really healthy awareness in the family now because of things that have happened that we couldn't hide from or sweep under the rug, which we had to just address with them. And for the better, that we do have a healthy sort of relationship with it now in the family. But, yeah, unfortunately, we went the wrong way to get there. I did. But, I think we're in a good state for that, moving into those, you know, teenage girl years, which are going to be fun.
Well, speaking of teenage years, I mean, obviously the question relates so much to how old the child is at the time and how much the awareness they have with their own particular needs and disabilities or whatever. And we try to calibrate the conversations, don't we, according to what's appropriate for them. We won't always get it right, but that's what we're trying to do. And the older and more self-confident and capable they are, the more you give the opportunity for the other person to take the lead or take the initiative to make the mistakes, to learn things. Whereas early on, you do have to be a bit more protective. But it's good to hear you guys talking about the way you've done this together. You know, you've thought about this together. You've got a strategy. You're on the same team. And I think that's critical. I mean, I had to say to our two kids, Christopher, I think when I started seeing a counselor, because I'd hit the wall, Christopher was, I think, 15, 14. Catherine was 2 years younger. And I made the specific point. I said to them, look, I'm now seeing a shrink. And I've often talked about seeing my shrink because that's a fun word and kind of makes it a little bit less ominous. And I've said, look, I just haven't been okay. I really need to work some things through, but I want to make sure you understand that this is not because of anything, you know, that you're responsible for. It's not, this is me. Kids tend to assume that they're the ones at fault when they're surrounded by these powerful adults and things are going wrong. Something they've done is wrong. And so you reassure them. As time goes on, you can say more and more to the point where now, and I've talked to Christopher about this, he's now seeing a counselor. He's now seeing a psychologist. He's 26 now. And he's really been struggling with some some issues, but he's very upfront about it and not ashamed at all to say, yeah, I saw my account. He calls him a shrink the other day. And these are the things we've been talking about. And then I will come back in kind. So I guess if the questioner was asking about, you know, how we kind of help our kids to get to that point, depending on their own capacity and their own ability, I suppose we're trying to set an example. We're trying to live out what we would hope they might live out eventually, and, you know, not be, if we don't want them to feel shame, you know, then don't treat it with shame ourselves. I love that emphasis you were talking about there, Daniel, about how your body feels. Like, what do you feel in your body? Because isn't that such an important, you know, part of the whole mix? This mental health thing it shows up in your body.
Just on that too, you know, Gary, you mentioned that I think you said you went and saw a shrink when I think Christopher was around 15.
Yeah.
How long before that moment when you did take yourself off, did you know you should have actually spoke to someone? Like, did you know 5 years earlier, shit, I'm struggling, I probably need to speak to someone, and then all of a sudden another year went past and you hadn't done it, and then it just got to a point where you're like, shit, I've hit the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew for 2 or 3 years at least that I was in trouble.
Yeah.
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 And I didn't do it.
And did nothing about it.
Right.
And I think that's something we need to bridge with guys.
Yep.
It's one thing for them to talk about it, but it's another thing for them to, when they acknowledge it, and that's the key, when they realize I'm struggling a bit in my head here, and then they go, I'm going to act on it, and then they save those 2, 3, 5 years of it festering or snowballing to get to a point where they hit the wall, try and eliminate that part where they don't have to hit the wall. And then I honestly think that if we can get that change, then you'll find so many more marriages and families will stay together.
Yeah.
Because like women seem to do, if it's an issue, they'll voice it and it gets resolved, where men let it sit and fester. And what started as maybe not even a real big issue over 4, 5, 6, 10 years becomes so big in their head and potentially physically, because they're so depressed with it and things like that, and they might have picked up habits to try and cope with it, that it's so far gone, which something that could have been addressed within the first 6 months of them knowing I'm struggling for some reason, but I can deal with this myself. I can handle this. You know, it seems to take men a point where they are literally making life-altering decisions before going, fuck, I need help now. Like, I really need help. And I wish I'd addressed it 5 years ago, because I know where this started, or I know where this has come from, but look at me now. I don't know how we get that change, but it's as simple as that, I think.
One way, I mean, it's beyond us. Well, maybe it's beyond us, but one way that I can say that it was helpful for me was I didn't know in advance, which seems really stupid in retrospect, but I didn't. And it was, I was living in an area where it was the policy of the health board that GPs would ask versions of questions on the I can't remember the name of the test, but you know whether you were asked the question. Do you remember the name?
No, but I know the test. Like, how often do you feel sad?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
how,
exactly.
How
well the DSM. Yeah, it's one of the DSM tests, and you know you when you're going in, you know you fill this out. But here it was whatever a person came in for, the GP was supposed to ask two or three of those questions, and if the responses were in a certain direction, go on. And so I went in and just, I was talking to a GP about, I was ill, you know, I had a virus. And she was asking these questions, and she was at the end, was like, and you have scored, like you're very highly on this test, so you need to go and do this. And that just came out of a conversation and took me, like, blindsided me in a way. But I think, you know, any kind of checkup for any kind of help, if there was like an indicator or a way to indicate in there, like that would be a way to have those conversations when people may not be wanting to face up.
Whether you're going to act on it or not, or brush it under the carpet, or pretend that it's going to go away eventually. Yeah. Like which ones of us would, if we heard an awful grinding noise in the engine of the car, Right, we'd say, oh, yeah, shit, something's wrong there. I'll give that a few years. I'll give that a few years and see if it gets better. You know?
You do something about it straight away, don't you?
Well, yeah, because, you know, it's only going to get worse. And the sooner you deal with it, the better. But when it comes to our own gears grinding, we know it's happening. We can feel them shredding. We think somehow or other, if we just ignore it or drink or do whatever we've talked about, it'll go away.
Yeah, well, I've just started seeing someone again, and it was just, you know, it was pretty much my partner Claire who pretty much said to me, go see somebody you really need to, because you're getting, she could see all of the traits of when I get my anxiety and when I get really stressed, especially with work and things, it's just really bottling up, and there was no, you know, it's like if you don't go now and get some help, you know, this is not gonna go well. And she knows that that quite often she ends up being the brunt of it all, because, you know, I'm just so in my way of anxiety that, you know, that I just say stupid things as well at the same time, and it's just because I'm just trying to get through every day. You know, every day it's just a race, and you're just trying to get to the finish line every day, and it's just getting just harder and harder. So, you know, she could see the triggers and everything coming, so it was good to pull me up at that time and go, yep, okay, let's do it. Get online now. You know, for me, one of my things is I've got to do it right there. If I wait to the next day or whatever, it always, you know, something will always come up. So it's even just that little bit of trying to get online, just trying to see how I can make an appointment, you know, whatever. As long as I know somebody's going to contact me, then that's it. I've done it. I've made that initial step forward to do it. So I've always got to act on something straight away. Otherwise, I could just, you know, go on and on and on.
I'm nodding very firmly in recognition here.
that's good.
Is it true for the rest of us?
I think we're all nodding here, really.
I think it's so important that your partner can identify that and call you out on it.
Absolutely.
Because I think about now, if I was starting to feel in a bit of a bad mental state, the thing I would be most scared or worried about would be telling my partner, because I feel that she would get really scared and revert back to thinking about how bad things were at one point. So ever since I got sorted and got this management plan in place, she's always like, please tell me whatever you're thinking, da da da, you know, tell me. But I know how much I hurt her through that time, and I want to try and protect her through that again. So it's funny, the other day when I had that little burst of anxiety out in the yard for some reason, my first thought was, fuck, like, I hope I'm okay, because I don't want to put my family through that again. And look, it was a 5-minute fleeting thing for some reason. I don't know whether it was too much sunshine or whatever, and it left. But yeah, I know if I said to my wife now, oh, look, I'm feeling good, but I just want to check in with the shrink, she would look into that a bit and think, I wonder why, like, shit, have I done something wrong? Is he going to leave again? And I'm not, and I could reassure her about that, but I just know the hurt I caused my family, that I would like if she actually identified it and went, you're acting like, I can see some signals, you should go and speak to someone. I feel like that would be a really good thing for her, and I'm sure she will if I get that bad again, but I'd like to think I can identify within myself before I get her to the point to go, something's off with you, you need some help. But yeah, I think it's a real thing that I fear. So I'm wondering if there's a lot of guys out there who may have gone through a journey and then think, shit, I hope I don't start to feel off again, because I'm really worried to tell my partner because I don't want to get her scared or my girl's scared again or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're good points, definitely.
So could I ask, did you tell Tara about that moment of anxiety?
No, I didn't. She'll probably find out now.
Because they're listening, guys.
they're listening. And look, I'm sure it won't surprise her if I had a bit of a moment, because I haven't had really any flare-ups for a long time. So I bet I should probably get off the podcast after and let her know what I've said, but give her a heads up. But no, I didn't. And that was the reason why I didn't.
Yeah.
I
just,
you know, it came and went. It was fine. There was none of the thoughts that there were 2 years ago when I went through it all. It wasn't like I didn't know who I was anymore, and I felt like I wasn't bringing joy to anyone and that. It was purely just to think, like, it's like I sort of thought where I was and all the things that I'm probably doing well, and thought, shit, am I actually doing as well in all those things as I feel like I think I am? And that's all it was. So that was fine, but yeah, it was probably something I should have said to her. Hey, I just had this really weird, you know, hot flash of anxiety for some reason, but you know, I didn't, and that's the reason I didn't. So I think if anything comes out of this podcast, it'd be me getting my ass turned and saying, hey, I just let everyone on the podcast will know about
that. Well, Claire asked me when I got that day, I saw her after the first session, and she goes, so what did you talk about? It's all. Hang on, isn't this the whole thing that I'm going in there to talk to someone? And it's like, well, I spoke about you the whole time. That kind of shut her up a little bit. It's like, well, you know.
but isn't it interesting, though, that it may not be shame that's keeping us from talking to our partners about these struggles. It might be this sense of we don't want to hurt anyone. We don't want to create problems that you know, we might be able to fix ourselves. We don't want to let anyone down. We want to help and do the right thing, and we're not sure we can, and we don't know what to do about that. So sometimes I think, you know, if I could say this, mums, it might be that your partner hasn't communicated with you, not because he doesn't trust you or want to tell you. He might be desperately wanting to talk to you about this, but he just doesn't quite know how it's going to affect you or hurt you or you know, mess you up because he knows you're tired, etc., etc. So, you know, sometimes we mean really well when we keep quiet. You know, we have good intentions and we're not quite sure what to do sometimes.
That's very well said. That's true. Thank you.
Yes. I'm glad we're recording it. I can write all that down later and I'll use that. Let's bump over to the final question, because this is a big topic in and of itself, and we can spend as long as you want on this, or short, whatever. It's just, this came in from, I know this one was from a dad. Thank you for the Bean Mix podcasts. I love hearing other men talk about the things that can be sometimes difficult to talk about. My question is, what do you think about the term, or he said the word toxic masculinity, and what should men do about it? Toxic masculinity. Well, here we are being masculine.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I can only say that as a term, I really despise it. And I think it's actually a pretty harmful term, not necessarily for the men that it's being applied to, but for the people who are applying it. I think it obscures things rather than illuminating things. I think toxic as a word, like to describe anything as toxic, for me, that's just beyond the pale. It's defeatism at its worst. It's like, I really just want to ask people when they describe something as toxic, like, do you really think there's nothing, there's absolutely nothing salvageable about this situation, this relationship, this person? Like, literally, it is beyond all hope. It is toxic. It's polluted. And I just think, I can't take that defeatism. and as for the masculinity part, I think it really just obscures things. Like, I look at people who are described as being, you know, showing toxic masculinity, and I think, is there not something else there that might explain their behavior? Are we not talking about narcissism? Are we not talking about desperation? Are we not talking about insecurity, complexes? Are we not talking about something else other than the fact that it's a man? Like, why do we choose the lowest common denominator that shows us what these supposedly toxic people all share, which is the fact that they're men? Why is it that thing rather than the more particular things about that person, their context, their circumstances, that we should be looking to really understand and then change, if we can, their behavior? Now, I think, you know, if you say, well, that's just another example of toxic masculinity, you've kind of got blinkers on a little bit. You're not seeing the person for their complexities, however distasteful that may be. You're kind of impeding your own understanding. I really can't stomach that phrase at all.
Just tell us what you really feel, Daniel. Don't hold back, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with Daniel to a certain degree too. I think it's it is a generalization, and you know, masculinity in itself is necessary to a certain degree. And I mean, what makes one man necessarily more masculine in this sense than another? I mean, is it physical size? Is it, you know, his brain power? Is it the fact that both those men, one with a big brain power, one with big muscles, both don't want to talk about their feelings? I mean, what are they referring to when they say toxic masculinity? I mean, the biggest guy in the gym who looks like he could be, you know, size of the Rock or whatever, he also could be the nicest, most caring guy in the world who has his mental health so in check, and he tells everyone and promotes that. So I think if you look at what toxic masculinity, or what I would look at what toxic masculinity is, it's probably the word masculinity isn't even the right word. I think the toxic aspect of what they're saying is that men don't talk enough. Men don't share their feelings enough. I don't know how much that's got to do with masculinity as much as, you know, men maybe not feeling comfortable for whatever reason to talk. I said it before. I think a lot of guys do want to talk. Maybe they don't have enough of the support network around them, the people they think they can trust, or maybe they just are a bit more standbackish and they're waiting for a leader to sort of raise that, and then they're more than keen to jump into that conversation. But, you know, I don't think that masculinity or toxic masculinity is necessarily the issue these days. I think things are getting a lot better on that front, and I know a lot of, you know, bigger companies, they all have their EAPs, their employment assistant programs, or things like that to encourage everyone to talk. So I sort of agree with Daniel. I think it's a bad term, and I don't think it's necessarily applicable to men that don't want to talk about their mental health. I think there's a lot more reasons why men don't want to talk about their mental health. It's not because they're all so macho and they don't believe in that shit. I mean, this isn't the 1930s, 1940s. We're not a post, you know, World War generation anymore where, you know, you were considered weak to talk about your feelings. It's out there everywhere. I think if you took a poll, majority of women would consider it to be masculine for a man to be open to talk about his feelings.
That's,
you know, I think they would find that
an extremely
attractive quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it was 60 or 70 years ago. So
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah, I think the toxic masculinity view, or the traditional view of what that was, that's dying out now, and it's a minority. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think you all summed it up pretty well. Yeah, I think, yeah, I know from chatting about this similar with Claire, and, you know, I think we see it now more, this sort of toxic masculinity is kind of like, you know, examples that we sort of see people, like, you know, just, you know, we've had family situations before where, you know, some of the younger members of the family we've been out and they've been drinking, and they've been sort of encouraging, you know, kind of the kids, you know, sort of trying to make it cool that they're all sort of just, you know, having a few beers and stuff, and sort of making it a lighthearted sort of situation in front of kind of our kids. And, you know, I think we're also finding that sort of masculinity to be more offensive now than kind of what it sort of used to be. And it's, you know, it's that kind of examples that they're sort of setting onto the, you know, the younger kids, and, you know, and, you know, even, you know, Lexi calling out Lexi, sexy Lexi, you know, even that we're now finding, you know, to kind of, it's like, you know, so, well, why do you have to say, you know, this is not what, how we want to be raising our children, sort of thing. So, you know, it's even different versions of that now, I think, we're sort of finding as well, rather than sort of how it was always sort of perceived, rather than a strength kind of thing. You know, I think it's even more in, you know, mannerisms and things that like that too now, you know.
So I think that's a really good point, Dino. You know, a really good example of, you know, the dad sort of encouraging the younger boy to get the beer out of the fridge, or and have a sip, and then when he goes yuck or whatever, and he goes you know, man up or something.
Yeah,
I think that's a great example of toxic masculinity right there because it's affecting the younger generation to think they have to be a certain way, and real men drink beer, and it's cool to be 10 years old and sip your dad's beer and think. And I think that has probably a lot to do with what our culture, particularly our drinking culture in Australia, and I think it's starting to change a little bit now, which is great. But, you know, the generations of like my dad and those dads, and who all had dads that were alcoholics and things, and post-war alcoholism and stuff. And that That is a toxic masculinity that's led to a lot of these guys to think, well, my dad said I have to drink beer and not talk about my feelings because that's, you know, that's what poofters do and things, so I'm going to carry it to my kids. So, and sorry to use a bad term, but that's how they used to talk.
No, exactly.
But, you know, and I think that's starting, hopefully now, starting to phase out a little bit, and I think the next couple of generations it will phase out more, but I think that's a great example of toxic masculinity at its best.
Yes, that's really good. I mean, the term came from somewhere. It didn't just pop up out of nowhere. Mm. And I think whenever a term like that hangs around for a while, there's got to be some kernel of truth in it. Like, it was a reaction against, as I understand it, this notion of the alpha male who, you know, to be a good man is to be a certain kind of man, which has to be called out because it's not. It's not a good thing at all.
Yeah.
And to call it toxic masculinity might have got the attention at the time that it needed. But then with any good term like that, it gets caught up in the language of the culture, and then it becomes misused and misunderstood and abused, and it loses its effect and it becomes actually counterproductive. So I think we may have reached the point where for most of us it's not very productive. But I think it's a good warning. All right, is there something the word masculinity is useless to me. I don't know what that word means, but is there ever anything toxic or unhealthy or unhelpful about what I say or do or don't say or don't do? And I suppose in a way, to me, that's a call out which is useful. But that's been really good to hear your perspectives on that. I hope our questioner found that helpful as well.
Can I just add something on there? Like, when you get that kind of stuff, like, you know, commentary and comments and things like that, the thing that I find really helpful is just pause the conversation and just ask for clarification. Ask someone that's just to clarify.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Could you just, sorry, I didn't quite understand that bit. Could you just explain this? Because once they have to like stop and reflect and repeat themselves, it becomes quite evident. And I would say, just to kind of put you in terms of toxic masculinity, I would say that question takes the toxicity away from it, that you actually end up draining some of that stress and poison out of it and can reclaim the situation from there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And look, for those of you who are listening, we are really aware for many of the mums, the pain that has been caused by disharmony or dysfunction in a relationship, and that it may well be true that for you a man has been a source of violence and mistreatment, and we're not belittling that or pretending that that's not true, because it is for many mums, and it's true for some men as well who've had the same kind of experience from other men. But I think what we're trying to explore is the term, because that was the question that was asked, and how we reflected on that. And I hope you take that in that spirit, and we wouldn't want to diminish any of that feeling that or reality for some of you that we all know is true. And we would hope that each of us is able to you know, monitor and be the best men we can be and the best dads we can be. And I guess that's what we're trying to do. And we know that for many of you dads, that's the same. So good on you if that's what you're doing. We call out the times when each of us has, you know, not lived up to our own standards or done the best we could, but we also acknowledge that there are times when we have, and we've done our best and we do our best, and you do too. And a shout out to, let's say, to Claire and Tara and Marnie, who we know are listening, and who kind of are always present in these conversations, because they're present in the lives of at least you three guys. There's a ghost for me, but the you know. So a shout out to you ladies for the fantastic contribution you make without actually even being here in this conversation in our lives. Let's wrap up with a I heard someone say, gentlemen, shall we?
Well, I heard Dino say at the outset that he was seeing a psychologist.
Yeah, that's
right. We didn't. I wasn't sure if that was going to come back up. In the end, it did, but it really struck me when you said that and just said it. That was one sentence. I'm seeing a psychologist, yep. and we didn't pick up on it. Yep. And it stayed with me. And then I heard you say, you know, that it was Claire who said to you, you know, you should go and see, you should go and see this person. So I was quite struck by just that. From those comments, there was this picture of what it looks like when two people are on the same team and have each other's backs, and one gives the advice and one listens and act on it and is now in a different situation. It was really nice to get that little story in these snippets.
Yeah, and look, I think it
has just on that.
Sean, I was just going to say that I think it actually has helped us that I have listened, you know, and I think it's made us two better as well because of that.
Wow.
And Dina, on that, do you think Claire would have been a bit worried to say that to you? Like, I mean, people don't, I mean, even if it's your partner, like no one likes to be said, or I think your mental health, you start to struggle with your mental health and you're like, oh, well, I'm fine. But do you think there would have been some apprehension from her to go, oh, I've been noticing this over the last week. I really want to raise it. I'm waiting for the right moment. Or do you think she just would have went, no, 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 I don't know. I know how bad it can get. So fuck this. I'm just going to come out and say it.
Yeah. I think it was more that second, on the second part, you know, because she's just like, it's time. Yeah. Now I can see it coming and it's bottling and you really need to get some help now, because otherwise this is going to go north, you know, it's just going to go a way that we don't want it to go. And and just to pull us, and it's already helped. It's been great, you know, it's good. And it stresses of every, all sorts of things, you know, so it's been good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I heard Daniel say, and this is something that just, it seems so obvious now that you said it, but it's something I never thought about. But when you said about it's coming to the Christmas time of year.
I heard that too.
And you're saying it's just the stress that you're starting to feel now. Lexi, I think. Is it Lexi?
Or Ivy.
Ivy, sorry. About Ivy, you're trying to find the right Santa because she needs to try and lip read and he's got a beard. And then you're like, well, maybe it's just something we might just try and phase out. And I'm like, it's just something I never thought about, that is someone's reality where they've got to try and avoid Santa or, you know, find the right Santa for their family's needs. And I think it's just something that struck me a bit. So, mate, I think all the best on that. And it's that'd be a very hard situation because, I mean, you can't escape Christmas. So,
there's no doubt it's one of the worst times of the year for many of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kate and Mandy and I are doing a recording in a couple of weeks about just looking back on the year, but in particular approaching Christmas, because it is such a huge thing for many of us. We seem to have lost Dino, so we're down to three beans, and I'm not quite sure what happened there. I don't think he stormed off or anything. Somehow or other he's offline, so hopefully he'll come back. But in the meantime, I'll just say, look, I've heard so many things in this last hour and a bit. It's really hard to pick from them. Each of you have said some things that I take notes here because that's me. But okay, one I'll pick then. Daniel, you were talking about that question about how we help our children to take notice of their mental health and not be ashamed. And you said you focus in on the question of how you're feeling, how your body's feeling right now, what's going on in your body. And that is such a gem. Of insight, you know, because it's true that our bodies carry so much of what's going on in our head, and it's a good clue as to what's going on there, but it's also a place where we can start. We can, what's something we can do to make me feel a little bit better or help that person feel a little bit better? And it's a perfect place to start. So I really thought that was just a gem. Thank you for that. And Kirk, you know, your perspective on in the workplace, on the construction site, is really useful to me, really helpful to me, because I don't have much experience with that. And to hear you say, you know, that most blokes actually quite happy to talk if the conditions are right, if they're given a chance, and you know they're not going to be laughed at or whatever. I really find that really hopeful, because I wasn't sure that would be true. So you know, I'm glad to hear you say it. I know it's not true for everyone, but it was nice to hear. Listen, guys, we're going to go. I don't think Dino's coming back. Sorry, Dino, when you're listening back to this, we had to sort of wind it up. We weren't sure what was happening. We hope you're all right. And we hope it's just a technical glitch and nothing more. Thank you for listening to us, you know, wander on for an hour and a bit. We really like to talk about these things with each other because it's good for us, but we like to know and to think that you're listening as well. Please give us some feedback. Let us know what you're thinking. Send us questions. We're happy to do this as often as you would like. And we really think it's good for us to be doing it anyway. So throughout Movember, men, don't be ashamed to talk about your mental health. Don't be afraid to talk about it with somebody, the right person, because if those gears are grinding, they're not going to get any better if you ignore it.
Mm.
Anyway, thanks, guys. We'll talk again
soon. Thanks, Gary.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Been fun.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.